It is a true gift that Andrew has to play all of my most hated songs.
And by accident, too.
I know.
Like, not like trolling
this happens,
you.
This happens every time.
It happens every time. It's crazy. He's like, here you go, UB40, red, red wine again. Our buddy Trisha hanging out with us. Rach is back. Stairway to Kevin.
All right, I have two things I want to do. I want to run by you guys. And they're both relatively short, but they're fascinating to me. One of them is a new thing I just found out about today. So I want to get your guys' reaction on this. Would you do this as people that are DoorDashers that order a lot of stuff? Major League Baseball launched MLB Ballpark Bites. So it's sponsored by MasterCard. So somehow they found a corporate sponsor for the food service that they're offering. So you can, if you're in a place that has these things, you can order, quote unquote, ballpark food and have it DoorDashed to you or whatever. And it's like, I don't know, everything's a pretzel bun, which apparently is a ballpark thing, they say. But it's like a ballpark dog, you know, the Philly cheesesteak, different types of chicken sandwiches, fries, steakhouse sandwich. The ball bucket is a bunch of donuts with dipping sauces and things like that. So would you order out ballpark food? It's not available in St. Louis, by the way. I looked.
I don't think I would, and here's why. I can make a kick-ass hot dog at home. There's something about a dog and a beer at the game.
Yeah.
The sights, the smells, the vibe. By the time the nachos get to me, they're like cereal, you know? So, yeah, I get why it appeals, but it doesn't appeal to me. Mm-hmm.
Could I sell you on the heater?
What's a heater?
That's a crispy, all-natural chicken strip sandwich tossed with hickory smoked bacon, sautéed jalapenos, serrano peppers, onions, and cheese sauce on a pretzel roll.
I would eat that.
I mean, but would you order it? Would you be like, I'm going to DoorDash this Ballpark's Bites food?
No.
I wouldn't either.
I wouldn't either. And I just went to the game on Wednesday, and we got like a hot dog, which was great, and then a cheeseburger. And I remember like commenting to Kurt, like, this is just it. I mean, it was a fine burger. It tasted good, but it was like a frozen patty that you could just, you know, make at home yourself, and it cost $18 or something. Yeah. Like, it's not worth it.
I also can't see what these things cost.
That's the suspect part.
Expensive.
Because it's not here in St. Louis. Like, the closest one is, where's that one? I don't know. There's a bunch in Illinois, but they're all up in Chicago, basically. So it's apparently they're expanding. They're looking to open more places, and they're in a ton of cities, or they have a ton of locations, but they're all centered around the biggest markets right now, so maybe it'll trickle down to others.
You know, I'm wondering if this is even actually coming from the ballpark or they're coming from Ghost Kitchens.
No, it's not. They're Ghost Kitchens. So they actually have an ad that says we're hiring young chefs if you want to be a part of something growing. And, you know, I guess they'll send you the ingredients.
Here's what I'm not getting, though. Is it because they serve such amazing food at the ballpark or because you're looking to get a ballpark experience at home?
I think
those are two really different things.
I think it's the second one. But it's not really like traditional, like it's not a ballpark hot dog. Like literally everything's in a pretzel bun. Mm-hmm. Like literally everything everything I described to you is in a pretzel bun, and you can get it with fries and a drink, and you can get a bunch of donut holes tossed in cinnamon sugar with dipping sauces. Like,
yum.
It's not the traditional like nachos. There's no nacho option. There's no regular ballpark hot dog. The closest thing is the quote ballpark hot dog, which is the dog in the pretzel bun with mustard and things.
Rach, I took Andrew to the game the other day and I didn't buy him enough food.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Classic mistake. Classic mistake.
All right. That's so tough. We're all a no on this.
Yes.
Because I'm curious. I think it's obviously, to me, it sounds like a big fail. You can get better food probably for less from your local places, and they can be similar things. Like every place near me, if I want a pretzel bun on a dog, on a burger or something, I can get that. So I'm not going to get that. All right. So, Dave, you love this kind of stuff. I don't know, Trisha, if you're into this kind of stuff, but somebody, I saw this on Twitter the other day, the math of what it took for all of us to each of us be here on this planet now. So, obviously, you need two parents, which means four grandparents, which means second great grandparents. But in the end, when you get down to it, 12 generations, it takes over 4,000 ancestors, over 400 years, for each one of us to just be here.
And not to get all graphic, but we're all grown-ups here. For each one of those, there are like 500 million little sperm competing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a great point.
So you have to have 4,000 people each with that one, because if 4,000 years ago, one of your ancestors, the wrong sperm got in, now you're your brother instead
right,
of you.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's just, it was fascinating because obviously...
That sounded like the worst professor of all time.
Yeah.
So there's like 500 million of them, and if they didn't get in, then you're your brother.
Right.
Which isn't even true. You're not your brother.
It's kind of true.
But those same ancestors are for your brother, your sister. Yeah. Like they have the exact same ancestors.
Everything had to line up for you to be
born.
But
think about that. Over 400 years, it's over 4,000 people that needed to exist for each one of us to exist.
Crazy.
Like the math is insane. And then you think about the variables, right? How many of those people barely escaped death from an illness when they were children, like 400 years? It's like 400 years ago was what? Like the 1600s. Like all of us, our line started at least that long ago.
Yeah, and my mom told me a story that her dad, so my grandpa, when he was a young man, 1919, in fact, it was the 1919 Spanish flu, was on his deathbed, literally on his deathbed,
man.
Like last rites. And we had a relative who was a doctor who moved into the home with him and nursed him back to health. But he was like a couple days from dying.
Wow.
Just...
I mean, then that's it, right?
Yeah,
like, that's it. That, like, none of us exist if that relative died.
Yeah. Mm. Then I'm my sister.
Yeah, or you're not, right?
Says
you're not.
Professor Glover.
You're one of the unlucky.
Look, there's like
500 million
of them. Okay.
I think this guy really wants to be a sister. He keeps saying that I'm my sister. Anything goes wrong, I get to be my sister.
Have you guys seen the new jeans that make it look like you wet yourself?
What?
Google it for me, please. They are $1,000.
Google it for me.
And they are...
What's the brand?
I don't know. Oops. Something like that.
What?
I'm looking at P jeans.
What pants?
Denim have an eye-popping price tag. Let's see. $811.
What? Why?
Or wet stain jeans.
I'm looking at them now. I don't understand.
Is this so you could pee your pants and nobody knows?
Mm-hmm. That's part of it.
Do you pay for it?
That many people are peeing themselves?
I mean, that's part of it.
Or
part of it is just like,
you know,
to be shocking. Part of it is it's a new fashion. And part of it is if you really have to go, then no one can really tell the difference.
Listen to this line. This is the line
But that's a great point, though, Trisha, because I could turn these Wranglers I'm wearing right now into those pants just
for
like
free.
That.
Mm-hmm. For free.
Yeah.
And literally for free.
I'm actually not wearing Wranglers. I'm wearing Jordache.
Listen to this line from the company. So the company apparently is called Wet Pants Denim. They say our jeans are designed to mimic the aesthetic of urinary incontinence without the commonly associated discomfort. What the heck?
Okay, so somebody...
Is this a gag?
Yeah, somebody's sitting around with their buddies and they watch Billy Madison where you're not cool if you don't pee your pants. They're like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to dupe the world. And it's working.
Yeah. Can rarely go wrong duping the world, man. I'm telling you.
Oh, goodness.
Man...
Yeah, I think we should order some.
We can just take turns wearing them.
Yeah, I'll try.
Like the sisterhood of traveling wet pants.
Do you think they magically
fit us all?
Like Glover peed himself the same way Trisha did.
So this just feels like a party. Like a bunch of dudes are high. They're watching Billy Madison, and they're like, "Let's do it. Let's make the pee jeans." And the guy's like, "What should we charge for?" He's like, $800. Everybody's laughing.
Right.
Laughing all the way to the bank.
My goodness,
were those in Billy Madison?
Well, there's the.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say you're not. Somebody pees. If you're not cool,
kid
you don't pee
pees
your pants.
His pants.
He's trying to make a kid
cool
feel better about peeing himself.
Okay.
Do you see that Coke and Pepsi are responsible for 20% of all the plastic problems that we have?
Oh.
See, that's what I was saying the other day. Like, don't come after me for my straw usage whenever it's the big corporations who are actually doing all the real damage.
Even though they're doing it, is it because we won't stop buying it?
Yeah, I mean,
we
play a role in it for sure.
That's an interesting point. I drink a lot of soda, right? So all that plastic that I'm contributing, is that morally, ethically, should that fall on me or should it fall on the...
I think it falls on both.
Yeah.
Mostly Andrew, though.
That's,
right?
not what I wanted to hear. Looking for some absolution.
You should feel guilty.
What are the options? I mean, do they offer it in paper or...
You're talking about, buying a soft
general
drink?
General stuff?
I mean, the only option you could have at home would be...
Would you drink Coke out of paper?
I would.
Yeah, like a carton? Yeah, why not? I feel like there are places that will have Am I making that up?
Do you think that the chemical makeup of sodas, though, would...
Right.
Would
eat right through it?
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, nothing we can do.
I think there would be...
Here we go, more plastic.
Put it this way. There would be a lot more product loss because those break easier than plastic bottles.
What would you give up? Would you give up all soda to have 20... Let's call it 10. 10% less microplastics.
I personally would, but I...
But you doubt if you, that.
Put it this way.
Yeah, I mean...
If there was universal buy-in...
You're looking right at him.
I'm not doing it.
If there was universal buy-in, yes.
Why is it got to be my problem?
If everybody's going to buy in, then yes, I'm going along with it. If it's going to be me and like 99.9% of other people are just not going to, well, then it's not going to change anything, so
What if you were the...
Which is where we are right now.
Exactly. that's the whole problem with the changing the world.
What if you were the decision maker? Like, you have a desk with buttons.
Oh, I'm the decider.
And you can just hit a button. And sodas are gone. Gone from the world. Do you do it?
To save all the plastic?
Yeah.
They're kind of trying to do that with cigarettes, right? Like, they're banning cigarettes in the UK and different places. I feel like they're finally saying, all right, enough. Like, if you're this age and you're addicted, okay, but, like, no more.
No more.
A cutoff. Mm-hmm. So do we do that with plastics at some point?
We would never do that with cigarettes, right? We're way too... Well, like the tobacco lobbies,
they
want to
ban menthols.
Yeah,
this
they
has
are.
Been a big thing for the Biden administration. They keep like pushing it back because it's going to be bad for them when they do it.
Will we always be smoking something? I mean, like vapes were supposed to be the answer to smoking, and you're going to get off smoking because you're going to have this vape full of nothing but vapor, which lasted 2 seconds, and then it had nicotine or pot or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, and everybody's addicted to those now. Mm-hmm.
When did smoking leaves start? Like how long ago?
Smoking what?
Leaves of any kind, because
it's
I know.
Good question.
I mean,
I'm going to Google smoking leaves.
Yeah.
It's a really good question. My guess is probably somewhere around 14th, 15th, Sir Walter Raleigh.
According to this, it says the history of smoking dates back to 5000 BC.
Wow.
I was pretty close. Not.
It was like a long time ago, I reckon.
I think it was Jimmy Carter.
The earliest evidence of tobacco use dates back 12,000 years.
And again, who thought of that? What a strange thing to think of.
You wonder if you just like started, like milk. You're setting a fire and it's burning. Yeah. You're like, I like how that smells. I'm going to put that in my face.
Yeah, right.
That's how I always assume, right? It's got to be something like that. It's got to be something organic.
Isn't it weird?
It was aliens.
There was a first thing to everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just weird to me.
Could you imagine the first person that got high? Like you threw the plant and it turns out it was marijuana and you're like, whoa.
No, I swear it happened.
You know the stone, the stoned ape theory that we wouldn't be here except that our forefathers who were more ape than man were following game and the game would poop and these mushrooms would grow out of it and they would eat the mushrooms. They would get high and hallucinate, and it would give them ideas. And that's how we evolved so quickly. That's a real thing, the stoned ape theory.
So I've never done any of those things, so I'm asking a question, not making a judgment. Are we actually getting new ideas, or do we just think we are when we're really high?
I think both.
Yeah?
Like, I think it's probably 80% thinking that you invented dry cleaning, but...
Because, I mean, I know how the chemical, like, I know how our brain works, so if you're changing the chemistry, that can fire off different things.
Yeah.
That's the scientific term.
Well, and a lot of people report feeling, like, a sense of community when they use psychedelics, mm-hmm. and that could be really helpful as far as, like, ancient man working together mm-hmm. and trying new things, so...
But, yeah, exactly.
But think about how many... Okay, so we're around cows, right? And they have milk. But the first guy didn't suck on the first cow, right? I mean, it took a few guys until someone's like, what the hell's Clem doing?
Yeah.
And then
gotta
suddenly...
find a real freak.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then it becomes an industry. These are the kind of things that occupy my time. That and ancient aliens.
I'm a mama, papa, coming for you. I'm the space invader. I'll be a rock and rolling bitch for you. Keep your mouth shut. Just smoking like a big monkey.
Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Ricky Horton about the Cardinals, but let's talk a little football wheels. The first night of the draft was last night.
Yeah.
Any big stories?
Nothing that anybody here is going to be overly fired up about. I mean, you had three quarterbacks go 1-2-3, which was not surprising. They were all expected to go up at the top of the draft. The big thing to me that stood out was just watching it. So they're moving it around now. It used to be always in New York. Now they're moving it from place to place. I think it was Philly last year. It's in Detroit this year. There were 275,000 people in downtown Detroit for the draft. You can't get anybody to do anything for anything important, but you can get almost 300,000 people.
That's a good point.
To go down there and in some cases, blocks away from the actual stage, just be down there because the NFL draft is there. Mm-hmm. The NFL has a crazy power over people.
Yeah.
Crazy power over people. And I haven't seen any of the ratings. I guarantee you the ratings are insane because it's on both NFL Network and on ESPN. And I promise you that countless tens of millions of people were watching over the course of the night.
And you said under the heading of baseball is dying, you have some stats?
Yeah, so you guys, I mean, have you paid attention at all to the arguments?
Bit.
Like baseball's crowd, older audience, kids aren't playing baseball anymore. Well, there's a really interesting story today that kind of points to all of that being nonsense. So they found out now over the last few years, the average ticket buyer for Major League Baseball has gotten younger as the last few years have gone by, which is a great sign. Mm-hmm. The ratings demographic on TV is now exactly the same as the NFL. So if the baseball audience is old, well, then the NFL audience is old, and nobody cares because those are the two biggest revenue-generating leagues on the planet. Like, nobody, not the NBA is not at their level of either of those sports, although it's the next one. Take all the British Premier League, take all this out. None of them are as big as Major League Baseball and the NFL in revenue. But then there's also another one that is even bigger to me. There's been, since 2014, so in a decade, there's been a 108% increase in kids playing baseball just for fun. Just casual baseball playing, not the serious, not the travel stuff that I'm always in, that I'm involved in. That's a huge change because, again, remember everybody's complaint is kids aren't playing sports as much or playing baseball as much as they used to and all of that. Those are really good signs. And they're like, baseball took active steps to try to make this happen. So obviously the plan's working.
Thank you, Tricia. Appreciate it.
Thank
Have a
you
good
guys.
Weekend.
You too.
Conversation with Ricky Horton is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, guys. DG, as time to talk to our pal Rick Horton. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good, buddy. We're going to talk Cardinals, of course, but I have a Dave question for you to start out. I know you like those, and
sure.
I love asking them. So I'm going to use myself as an example, but I'm using the royal me, not me in particular. But at my best, I was 5'10 and athletic and played sports in college on scholarship, but at SIUE, I wasn't like at Ole Miss or something. And I played baseball, and I was a good infielder, had a good arm. Had I dedicated myself day and night, can a royal me like that make it to the big leagues? Or do you think that everyone who makes the big leagues is special, that God put something in he didn't put into other people?
Well, first of all, you are royalty to me no matter what. When you say the royal me, you're talking, I mean, that just so resonates with me. And that's the way I smooth my answer to you, to say that I think that players are uniquely gifted in a way that, you know, and sometimes it's a specific gift. Sometimes it's like world-class speed. Sometimes it's an arm that's way cut above everybody else. So I think most players are that. Now, I will say this. There are some players. David Eckstein's the guy I'm thinking about. You could have been maybe David Eckstein. He's a guy that was always under the radar in terms of his tools, but yet he just outworked everybody else. And, you know, the other tool that we never talk enough about is the heart and the guts and the determination and the mental strength and all that stuff. You know, if that – and I'm sure you have all those in spades, the royal you and just others might – that certainly helps.
Interesting. Yeah. I thought that would be your answer. Wheels weigh in.
Well, there's also a different tool set that I think, Ricky, that everybody instinctively knows in the game, but I think people don't talk enough about. And that's also eyesight and hand-eye coordination.
Yeah. Oh.
Right?
Oh.
Like David Eckstein might not have been big, and he might not have thrown 90, but I can tell you, he could put the bat to the ball almost every time he took a swing.
Great point.
And that can be a gift. I mean, yes, it's trained. It's a trained skill. But your eyesight is your eyesight, and your hand-eye coordination can be preternatural.
I heard someone talking about this. Ricky, it could have been, honestly, it could have been you, but talking about Newt Barr and how next level his eyesight is.
Well, it wasn't me, but it could have been, because I love this conversation. I actually said several years ago that I thought the next kind of scandal in baseball was going to be the ability to create mega eyesight for somebody. It's the new steroids. It's the new, the new scandal in baseball. It's the new sticky stuff. Now it's going to be eye surgery to give you enhancement to see a baseball somehow. Because honestly, you hear hitters all the time talk about, I didn't see the ball, or I'm seeing the ball well. Well, that's not just seeing it. It's seeing the spin on it. And you're talking about hitting a ball that is coming to you in less than a half a second. If you don't see it, you're sunk.
Yeah, and I will say this, too. I tend to agree with Rick. I think that there are gifts, just like you think about with any sport, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, there are gifts that you cannot just add. I mean, like, I know that technology's better now. The understanding is better now. I worked my entire life to try to throw hard enough, and it never happened. It just wasn't there. I mean, no matter how much long toss I did. Now, maybe it's more now. But I do think there's a cap. Yeah. There's a cap on that for everybody.
You know what's interesting? I'm sitting here listening to you guys think, and I'm thinking there are a lot of funny people out there, but they don't become Robin Williams.
Right.
There are a lot of good lawyers. They don't become justices of the Supreme Court.
Right.
It's not just physical athletes that need something special put into them.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of people that paint, and there are very few Rembrandts and Van Goghs. And what is it? Well, it's because they're artists at what they do, and they see things that other people don't see. And I think that's what players do. Jim Edmonds is an absolute savant when it comes to picking up pitches. He was a savant playing center field, and you could get all kinds of training in the world, and you're not going to know that, the thing that he has to be able to have been such a great center fielder. And I think there is that artistry that's a part of being an athlete too. That's again, you're born with.
Let's talk about this next series, of course, but then Wheels was talking about the next two or three series that we have an opportunity here.
Yeah. I mean, the Mets got off to a very slow start. They were 0-5. I'm actually at the ballpark right now, and it's really a cool day. It's upper 50s, but it feels warmer than that, and kind of just feels like a good day to get off to a good start on the road trip. The Mets are gettable. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They're pitching a guy we're not that familiar with, which sometimes could be a bad thing. But I think you win 2 out of 3 here. You win 2 out of 3 in Detroit, and it's a good road trip. You don't have to go 6-0, but you want to start kind of building some momentum on this winning trip. You never start out to just win a series. You want to kind of win them all, but I think realistically, 2 out of 3 in both places would be just fine.
Ricky, how surprised are you that the power has been such a problem? I mean, the pitching has been repaired largely, especially the bullpen. The bullpen's been amazing. The defense has been back to standard, but the White Sox are the only team that's hit fewer home runs. And I saw this from it was on a Buster Olney. It was on the Sunday Night Baseball podcast. He had they had one of their producers looking it up. But the Cardinals only have 2 extra base hits this year on over 500 pitches faced at 95 miles an hour and above. So they're struggling with velocity and obviously with power. What do we make of that? Is it just a bad month?
Well, it's interesting. I thought I had it figured out, and then I was wrong, which, that's the first time for that. So spring training, the power wasn't there either. But it's also really hard to hit home runs at Roger Dean Stadium. The wind's blowing in, and it's a long ballpark, and it's not unusual to not have a lot of home runs, both the Cardinals and the other team. We went out and played in Mesa, Arizona against the Cubs. Guys took batting practice, and everybody was hitting 15 out, and we had, I think, 2 or 3 in the games. And I mean, it was like, oh, okay, now the boys are back. They were tired of hitting in Florida, and they like to hit in Arizona. And I thought it would continue forward because they kind of got the mojo going, because there's some mental stuff to that, too, of thinking that every ball I hit isn't going to go out. You get frustrated, and frustration's no way to play baseball. But that didn't really happen. So my first guess was wrong. My next guess is to be determined. I'm not sure where the home run problem is right now, but hoping they can figure that out quickly.
Rick, talk a bit about getting sent down. Zach Thompson and Walker being sent down for different reasons, but that has to have a psychological effect on a player who thought that they had made it for good.
Yeah, well, you go down, and you know the travel's nice, but not as nice. The uniforms are nice, but not as nice. The crowds are big, but not as big. And everything is kind of a step down, and you know it, you feel it. But you also have the job of connecting to new teammates and of course, they're guys you know, and you kind of got to get in the flow quickly. But you can't sulk about it, because nobody on your new team wants to hear you whine about the fact that you're on their team, because they're going in the opposite direction. And so you have to be very careful about that. So AAA sometimes can be a dicey place to manage players, because you've got some frustrated guys there. And so, you know, as long as you're playing frustrated, you're not going to play well. So you have to get over it quickly. You know, Danny Cox was the best guy I ever saw. He got sent down in 1985, and he said, you know what, I deserve to be sent down. I'm going to go down there and work at it, and I'm going to earn my way back here. He said that publicly. And that was his attitude, and that's the way he looked at it. And I've never seen a guy say that so clearly and directly, but that's really what the job is. And because you're only hurting yourself if you go 0 for 20 down there. I mean, you got to find a way to start earning your way back.
I think I'm remembering this correctly, Rick, but when he was with the Royals, Carlos Beltran won Rookie of the Year. He got sent down the next year around this time. I don't think it lasted very long, but it's kind of what you're talking about. Like, sometimes even when you've done some good things, in the moment it needs to happen for whatever reason, whether it's to take the pressure off you, to work on something that you need to work on, which is really hard to do in the big leagues.
Well, and the Danny Cox example that I gave was like Beltran, after he had a really good rookie season, right, and it was the next year. And I think the point there is sometimes the league figures something out about you, and maybe they did with Zach Thompson and with Jordan Walker. I mean, that news travels fast. If you got a pitch he's not hitting, I mean, everybody's telling everybody, and they're watching it on video, and then they're replicating it, and then you kind of spiral in a bad way. So you've got to figure out what they were doing to you, and you have to counteract that. And again, that's what Danny did, and that's what Jordan Walker does. Jordan Walker's a big leaguer. I mean, he's going to be.
Yeah.
Nobody's giving up on Jordan Walker, but he has to get right, because you don't want him in the middle of a lineup, you know, going 0 for 4 every night, and that just compounds the problem that he's dealing with mentally.
Talking to our pal Ricky Horton here. Rick, let's end this where we started it. So tomorrow, Sonny Gray pitches. He, of course, is our ace. He's a normal-sized guy. If he was your insurance agent, you wouldn't, you know, you'd be like, hey, it's a good-looking athletic guy, but you wouldn't think, oh, he should be in the MLB. What is it that makes Sonny so special?
Well, first of all, if he's my insurance agent, I probably wouldn't lead with he's a good-looking guy. I wouldn't lead with that. But what makes him special is all the things we were talking about earlier. This guy has a savant quality in terms of understanding how to pitch and how to make the ball move on his call and command the game, control the game, control the strike zone. He also can make it spin really well. His breaking pitches are elite, and he just, again, knows how to use them.
You know what I love about him? I remember when I was going to go play my first season of tackle football, my best friend's dad pulled me aside, and he thought I was a good little athlete, and I wanted to be a defensive back, and he said, here's what you do. You knock everyone on their ass, and then you help every one of them up. And that reminds me of Sonny Gray, that he seems like the consummate gentleman until he's on the mound, and then you're his enemy.
It's my favorite kind of athlete, frankly. I mean, you want somebody to play hard and play – you know, I mean, compete, and you basically, when you're playing for your teammates and with your teammates. But when it's over, you know, the people on the other side are human beings, and if you're not kind of treating them with respect and grace at times, then you're missing the boat.
All right, have a great call, Rick.
Thanks, guys. Take a second look.
It's 2:46, brought to you by Fira Capital Management.
DGS, happy Friday. Kind of Winnie the Pooh's blustery day out there. It is 2:51. Michael Kelly's joining us. This is going to sound weird, because you do this semi-professionally, and I say semi because you have a day job.
Right.
But I was listening to you today. I was visiting with my mom, who's in rehab, and we brought her a radio so she can listen to KMOX 24/7 because she did that before she fell. And you are really, really good. You're a really good host.
Hey, now.
You really are.
Mm-hmm. Holy cow. I'm already red, but geez, I'm redder. Well, that's cool. You know,
I've always known you're a great guest. And I've heard, obviously, I watched your show and I've listened to you. But I was just like, holy hell, this guy's really good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you must have heard something I was passionate about. I'm a little freaked out about these cicadas. And I talked about that today.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, I read the article. It's 60 billion cicadas just in the city of St. Louis. Now, think of how big the city of St. Louis is. I think we kind of forget sometimes how many a billion is.
Let's get them to vote.
That's 1,000 millions. These things are dime-sized. So if there are dime-sized, a million of them, you would think we would notice them when we're walking around. 60 billion of them?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, like, biblical.
Okay, help me out. Okay, when I think cicadas, I think locusts.
Right.
And when I think locusts, I think of when I was a little kid and they would shed their skin and you'd put the little exoskeleton on your shirt.
That's it.
So this is what they are, right? Yep. This is what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
When are they arriving? Do we know?
So I do. I know far more about this than I want to. So it could be any day. It's amazing what our scientists have figured out. So, like, you guys know there's like a 15-year and a 17-year, and they may hit it. They're going to hit it at the same time, and it's going to be epic. Etc. So it's 64 degrees the soil has to be, and then that like wakes them up from their 15 or 17 year. It almost sounds like a sci-fi movie.
It does.
Right?
Like, sounds made up.
And here's what I want to know. Is it the same guy who goes back in, or do they go back in and lay the eggs and just wait around for 17 years?
I think they like lived it. Like, I think the ones that are coming up will have been alive for like 17 years or whatever.
Well, I bet they got to pee.
You know who's not afraid? You know who's not afraid in the slightest?
Who's that?
Look who's not afraid in the tiniest bit.
Not at all bothered
by the thought of 60 billion.
Conversation with Ricky Horton is brought to you by Goodwill. Give hope, give local, give Goodwill.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. Time to talk to our pal Rick Horton. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good, buddy. We're going to talk Cardinals, of course, but I have a Dave question for you to start out. I know you like those, and
sure.
I love asking them. So I'm going to use myself as an example, but I'm using the royal me, not me in particular. But at my best, I was 5'10 and athletic and played sports in college on scholarship, but at SIUE, I wasn't like at Ole Miss or something. And I played baseball, and I was a good infielder, had a good arm. Had I dedicated myself day and night, can a royal me like that make it to the big leagues? Or do you think that everyone who makes the big leagues is special, that God put something in he didn't put into other people?
Well, first of all, you are royalty to me no matter what. When you say the royal me, that just so resonates with me. And that's the way I smooth my answer to you, to say that I think that players are uniquely gifted in a way that, you know, and sometimes it's a specific gift. Sometimes it's like world-class speed. Sometimes it's an arm that's way cut above everybody else. So I think most players are that. Now, I will say this. There are some players. David Eckstein's the guy I'm thinking about. You could have been maybe David Eckstein. He's a guy that was always under the radar in terms of his tools, but yet he just outworked everybody else. And, you know, the other tool that we never talk enough about is the heart and the guts and the determination and the mental strength and all that stuff. You know, if that – and I'm sure you have all those in spades, the royal you and just others might – that certainly helps.
Interesting. Yeah. I thought that would be your answer. Wheels weigh in.
Well, there's also a different tool set that I think, Ricky, that everybody instinctively knows in the game, but I think people don't talk enough about. And that's also eyesight and hand-eye coordination.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Right?
Oh.
Like David Eckstein might not have been big, and he might not have thrown 90, but I can tell you, he could put the bat to the ball almost every time he took a swing.
Great point.
And that can be a gift. I mean, yes, it's trained. It's a trained skill. But your eyesight is your eyesight, and your hand-eye coordination can be preternatural.
I heard someone talking about this. Ricky, it could have been, honestly, it could have been you, but talking about Newt Barr and how next level his eyesight is.
Well, it wasn't me, but it could have been, because I love this conversation. I actually said several years ago that I thought the next kind of scandal in baseball was going to be the ability to create mega eyesight for somebody. Like, you know, it's the new steroids. It's the new, the new scandal in baseball. It's the new sticky stuff. Now it's going to be eye surgery to give you enhancement to see a baseball somehow. Because honestly, you hear hitters all the time talk about, I didn't see the ball, or I'm seeing the ball well. Well, that's not just seeing it. It's seeing the spin on it. And you're talking about hitting a ball that is coming to you in less than a half a second. If you don't see it, you're sunk.
Yeah, and I will say this, too. I tend to agree with Rick. I think that there are gifts, just like you think about with any sport, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, there are gifts that you cannot just add. I mean, like, I know that technology's better now. The understanding is better now. I worked my entire life to try to throw hard enough, and it never happened. It just wasn't there. I mean, no matter how much long toss I did. Now, maybe it's more now. But I do think there's a cap. Yeah. There's a cap on that for everybody.
You know what's interesting? I'm sitting here listening to you guys think, and I'm thinking there are a lot of funny people out there, but they don't become Robin Williams.
Right.
There are a lot of good lawyers. They don't become justices of the Supreme Court.
Right.
It's not just physical athletes that need something special put into them.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of people that paint, and there are very few Rembrandts and Van Goghs. And,
right.
And what is it? Well, it's because they're artists at what they do, and they see things that other people don't see. And I think that's what players do. Jim Edmonds is an absolute savant when it comes to picking up pitches. He was a savant playing center field, and you could get all kinds of training in the world, and you're not going to know the thing that he has to be able to have been such a great center fielder. And I think there is that artistry that's a part of being an athlete too. That's you're born with.
Yeah. Let's talk about this next series, of course, but then Wheels was talking about the next two or three series that we have an opportunity here.
Yeah. I mean, the Mets got off to a very slow start. They were 0-5. I'm actually at the ballpark right now, and it's really a cool day. It's upper 50s, but it feels warmer than that, and kind of just feels like a good day to get off to a good start on the road trip. The Mets are gettable. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They're pitching a guy we're not that familiar with, which sometimes could be a bad thing. But I think you win 2 out of 3 here. You win 2 out of 3 in Detroit, and it's a good road trip. You don't have to go 6-0, but you want to start kind of building some momentum on this winning trip. You never start out to just win a series. You want to kind of win them all, but I think realistically, 2 out of 3 in both places would be just fine.
Ricky, how surprised are you that the power has been such a problem? I mean, the pitching has been repaired largely, especially the bullpen. The bullpen's been amazing. The defense has been back to standard, but the White Sox are the only team that's hit fewer home runs. And I saw this from, it was on a Buster Olney. It was on the Sunday Night Baseball podcast. He had they had one of their producers looking it up. But the Cardinals only have 2 extra base hits this year on over 500 pitches faced at 95 miles an hour and above. So they're struggling with velocity and obviously with power. What do we make of that? Is it just a bad month?
Well, it's interesting. I thought I had it figured out, and then I was wrong, which, that's the first time for that. So spring training, the power wasn't there either. But it's also really hard to hit home runs at Roger Dean Stadium. The wind's blowing in, and it's a long ballpark, and it's not unusual to not have a lot of home runs, both the Cardinals and the other team. We went out and played in Mesa, Arizona against the Cubs. Guys took batting practice, and everybody was hitting 15 out, and we had, I think, 2 or 3 in the games. And I mean, it was like, oh, okay, now the boys are back. They were tired of hitting in Florida, and they like to hit in Arizona. And I thought it would continue forward because they kind of got the mojo going, because there's some mental stuff to that, too, of thinking that every ball I hit isn't going to go out. You get frustrated, and frustration's no way to play baseball. But that didn't really happen. So my first guess was wrong. My next guess is to be determined. I'm not sure where the home run problem is right now, but hoping they can figure that out quickly.
Rick, talk a bit about getting sent down. Zach Thompson and Walker being sent down for different reasons, but that has to have a psychological effect on a player who thought that they had made it for good.
Yeah, well, you go down, and the travel's nice, but not as nice. The uniforms are nice, but not as nice. The crowds are big, but not as big. And everything is kind of a step down, and you know it, you feel it. But you also have the job of connecting to new teammates and of course, they're guys you know, and you kind of got to get in the flow quickly. But you can't sulk about it, because nobody on your new team wants to hear you whine about the fact that you're on their team, because they're going in the opposite direction. And so you have to be very careful about that. So AAA sometimes can be a dicey place to manage players, because you've got some frustrated guys there. And so, you know, as long as you're playing frustrated, you're not going to play well. So you have to get over it quickly. You know, Danny Cox was the best guy I ever saw. He got sent down in 1985, and he said, you know what, I deserve to be sent down. I'm going to go down there and work at it, and I'm going to earn my way back here. He said that publicly. And that was his attitude, and that's the way he looked at it. And I've never seen a guy say that so clearly and directly, but that's really what the job is. And because you're only hurting yourself if you go 0 for 20 down there. I mean, you got to find a way to start earning your way back.
I think I'm remembering this correctly, Rick, but when he was with the Royals, Carlos Beltran won Rookie of the Year. He got sent down the next year around this time. I don't think it lasted very long, but it's kind of what you're talking about. Like, sometimes even when you've done some good things, in the moment it needs to happen for whatever reason, whether it's to take the pressure off you, to work on something that you need to work on, which is really hard to do in the big leagues.
Well, and the Danny Cox example that I gave was like Beltran, after he had a really good rookie season, right, and it was the next year. And I think the point there is sometimes the league figures something out about you, and maybe they did with Zach Thompson and with Jordan Walker. I mean, that news travels fast. If you got a pitch he's not hitting, I mean, everybody's telling everybody, and they're watching it on video, and then they're replicating it, and then you kind of spiral in a bad way. So you've got to figure out what they were doing to you, and you have to counteract that. And again, that's what Danny did, and that's what Jordan Walker does. Jordan Walker's a big leaguer. I mean, he's going to be.
Yeah.
Nobody's giving up on Jordan Walker, but he has to get right, because you don't want him in the middle of the lineup, you know, going 0 for 4 every night, and that just compounds the problem that he's dealing with mentally.
Talking to our pal Ricky Horton here. Rick, let's end this where we started it. So tomorrow, Sonny Gray pitches. He, of course, is our ace. He's a normal-sized guy. If he was your insurance agent, you wouldn't, you know, you'd be like, hey, it's a good-looking athletic guy, but you wouldn't think, oh, he should be in the MLB. What is it that makes Sonny so special?
Well, first of all, if he's my insurance agent, I probably wouldn't lead with, he's a good-looking guy. I wouldn't lead with that. But what makes him special is all the things we were talking about earlier. This guy has a savant quality in terms of understanding how to pitch and how to make the ball move on his call and command the game, control the game, control the strike zone. He also can make it spin really well. His breaking pitches are elite, and he just, again, knows how to use them.
You know what I love about him? I remember when I was going to go play my first season of tackle football, my best friend's dad pulled me aside, and he thought I was a good little athlete, and I wanted to be a defensive back, and he said, here's what you do. You knock everyone on their ass, and then you help every one of them up. And that reminds me of Sonny Gray, that he seems like the consummate gentleman until he's on the mound, and then you're his enemy.
It's my favorite kind of athlete, frankly. I mean, you want somebody to play hard and play – you know, I mean, compete, and you basically, when you're playing for your teammates and with your teammates. But when it's over, you know, the people on the other side are human beings, and if you're not kind of treating them with respect and grace at times, then you're missing the boat.
All right, have a great call, Rick.
Thanks, guys. Take a second look.
It's 2:46, brought to you by FIRA Capital Management.
DGS, happy Friday. Kind of Winnie the Pooh's blustery day out there. It is 2:51. Michael Kelly's joining us. This is going to sound weird, because you do this semi-professionally, and I say semi because you have a day job.
Right.
But I was listening to you today. I was visiting with my mom, who's in rehab, and we brought her a radio so she can listen to KMOX 24/7 because she did that before she fell. And you are really, really good. You're a really good host.
Hey, now.
You really are.
Mm-hmm. Holy cow. I'm already red, but geez, I'm even redder. Well, that's cool. You know,
I've always known you're a great guest. And I watched your show and I've listened to you. But I was just like, holy hell, this guy's really good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you must have heard something I was passionate about. I'm a little freaked out about these cicadas. And I talked about that today.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, I read the article. It's 60 billion cicadas just in the city of St. Louis. Now, think of how big the city of St. Louis is. I think we kind of forget sometimes how many a billion is.
Let's get them to vote.
That's 1,000 millions. These things are dime-sized. So if there are dime-sized, a million of them, you would think we would notice them when we're walking mm-hmm. around. 60 billion of them?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, like, biblical.
Okay, help me out. Okay, when I think cicadas, I think locusts.
Right.
And when I think locusts, I think of when I was a little kid and they would shed their skin and you'd put the little exoskeleton on your shirt.
That's it.
So this is what they are, right? Yep. This is what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
When are they arriving? Do we know?
So I do. I know far more about this than I want to. it could be any day. It's amazing what our scientists have figured out. So, like, you guys know there's like a 15-year and a 17-year, and they may hit it, they're going to hit at the same time, and it's going to be epic. Etc. So it's 64 degrees the soil has to be, and then that like wakes them up from their 15 or 17 year. It almost sounds like a sci-fi movie.
It does.
Right?
Like, sounds made up.
And here's what I want to know. Is it the same guy who goes back in, or do they go back in and lay the eggs and just wait around for 17 years?
I think the ones that are coming up will have been alive for like 17 years or whatever.
Well, I bet they got to pee.
You know who's not afraid? You know who's not afraid in the slightest?
Who's that?
Look who's not afraid in the tiniest bit.
Not at all bothered
by the thought of 60 billion cicadas coming up.
They don't bite. They're not locusts, by the way. Locusts are the ones they eat crops, which is why everybody was scared
like
of them.
Grasshoppers.
Similar. The only thing they eat is like tree sap. They don't take, like, they won't go eat our crops. So that's not. That's why they're not, like, why people feared locusts back in the day is because they would destroy your crops and then you have nothing to eat. That's not what cicadas are going to do, and they don't bite and they don't sting.
So here's my twisted mind. I'm like, okay, so if there's 60 billion of these things and they're dime-sized, something's going to eat them eventually.
Birds. Yes.
Does that mean we're going to have more of whatever eats them? Because suddenly they're going to have 60 billion more.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. So more deer, more ferrets, more.
Most of them will just die.
That's crazy, you guys.
But like, frogs eat them, I'm guessing.
I understand that the benefit is twofold. One, they're food. And two, they aerate your lawn. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding. Mm. Yeah. They drill down and.
Yeah.
So do you think in like a year.
Wait till Michael hears about the zombie locusts.
Oh, have you heard this?
I've heard. Your son told me about
them.
Okay. That day. Yeah, I knew
he's into that kind of stuff.
So a year from now, will we be able to dig down eight inches and find these little suckers sitting there waiting? Hey, it's early.
Wake them up early.
Yeah.
You're late for work.
I'm just fascinated by it, clearly, as you can tell, that there's going to be 60 billion of
them. Can I give you one more compliment? It's really sweet.
Uh-huh.
So my mom, as I've been saying, has lost about 75-80% of her cognition and kind of living in her own world. And I'm with her today, and I'm brushing her hair, and she says, "Is that Kelly?" And I have a niece named Kelly.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, "No, Mom, that's the nurse." And she goes, "No, Michael Kelly."
Aww.
Oh, look at that.
Man. So sweet.
How about that?
I'm going to leave. I mean, what else is there for me?
It's not going to get any better
Steve
than
Moore,
this.
Are you listening to this?
Come on and find it. With it, baby, cause you're fine and you're mine and you look so divine. Come and get your love. Come and get your love. Come and get your love. Come and get your love.
guys. DGS, happy Friday. Kind of Winnie the Pooh's blustery day out there. It is 2:51. Michael Kelly's joining us. This is going to sound weird because you do this semi-professionally, and I say semi because you have a day job.
Right.
But I was listening to you today. I was visiting with my mom, who's in rehab, and we brought her a radio so she can listen to KMOX 24/7 because she did that before she fell. And you are really, really good. You're a really good host.
Hey, now.
You really are.
Mm-hmm. Holy cow. Yeah. I'm already red, but geez, I'm redder. Well, that's cool. You know,
I've always known you're a great guest. And I've heard, obviously, I watched your show and I've listened to you. But I was just like, holy hell, this guy's really good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you must have heard something I was passionate about. I'm a little freaked out about these cicadas. And I talked about that today.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, I read the article. It's 60 billion cicadas just in the city of St. Louis. Now, think of how big the city of St. Louis is. I think we kind of forget sometimes how many a billion is.
Let's get them to vote.
That's 1,000 millions. These things are dime-sized. So if there are dime-sized, a million of them, you would think we would notice them when we're walking mm-hmm. around. 60 billion of them?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be, like, biblical.
Okay, help me out. Okay, when I think cicadas, I think locusts.
Right.
And when I think locusts, I think of when I was a little kid and they would shed their skin and you'd put the little exoskeleton on your shirt.
That's it.
So this is what they are, right? Yep. This is what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
When are they arriving? Do we know?
So I do. I know far more about this than I want to. So it could be any day. It's amazing what our scientists have figured out. So, like, you guys know there's like a 15 year and a 17 year, yeah. and they may hit it, they're going to hit at the same time and it's going to be epic. Etc. So it's 64 degrees the soil has to be, and then that like wakes them up from their 15
creepy.
Or 17 year. It almost sounds like a sci-fi movie.
It does.
Right?
Like, sounds made up.
And here's what I want to know. Is it the same guy who goes back in, or do they go back in and lay the eggs and just wait around for 17 years?
I think the ones that are coming up will have been alive for like 17 years or whatever.
Well, I bet they got to pee.
You know who's not afraid? You know who's not afraid in the slightest?
Who's that?
Look who's not afraid in the tiniest bit.
Not at all bothered
by the thought of 60 billion cicadas coming up.
They don't bite. They're not locusts, by the way. Locusts are the ones they eat crops, which is why everybody
was
scared
like
of them.
Grasshoppers.
The only thing they eat is like tree sap. They don't they won't go eat our crops So that's not. That's why they're not, like, why people feared locusts back in the day is because they would destroy your crops and then you have nothing to eat. That's not what cicadas are going to do, and they don't bite and they don't sting.
Here's my twisted mind. I'm like, okay, so if there's 60 billion of these things and they're dime-sized, something's going to eat them eventually.
Birds.
Yes. Does that mean we're going to have more of whatever eats them? Because suddenly they're going to have 60 billion more.
That's my understanding.
Yeah. So more deer, more ferrets, more.
Most of them will just die.
That's crazy, you guys.
But like, frogs eat them, I'm guessing.
I understand that the benefit is twofold. One, they're food. And two, they aerate your lawn. Mm-hmm. And I'm not kidding. Mm. Yeah. They drill down and.
Yeah.
So do you think in like.
Wait till Michael hears about the zombie locusts.
Oh, have you heard this?
I've heard. Your son told me about it.
Okay.
I knew
he's into that kind of stuff.
So a year from now, will we be able to dig down eight inches and find these little suckers sitting there waiting? Hey, it's early.
Wake them up early.
Yeah.
You're late for work.
I'm just fascinated by it, clearly, as you can tell, that there's going to be 60 billion of
them. Can I give you one more compliment? It's really sweet.
Uh-huh.
So my mom, as I've been saying, has lost about 75-80% of her cognition and kind of living in her own world. And I'm with her today, and I'm brushing her hair, and she says, "Is that Kelly?" And I have a niece named Kelly.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, "No, Mom, that's the nurse." And she goes, "No, Michael Kelly."
Aww.
Oh, look at that.
So sweet.
How about that?
I'm going to leave. I mean, what else is there for me to say?
It's not going to get any better
Steve
than
Moore,
this.
Are you listening to this?
Come on and